According to the National Cancer Institute, the percentage of people who develop melanoma in this country has more than doubled in the past 30 years. Melanoma is our topic on this scorching summer Friday edition of Please Explain, and I'm joined by Dr. Margaret Tucker, Director of the Human Genetics Program and Chief of the Genetic Epidemiology Branch at the National Cancer Institute, and by Dr. Anna Pavlik, Associate Professor of Medicine and Director of New York University's Melanoma Program. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Dr. Tucker, perhaps we should begin with a short explanation of the skin, its layers, and how it works, and how that eventually, in some cases, can lead to melanoma.
Well, the skin's major function is to protect you from the environment, and it protects you from losing moisture to the environment, and it protects you from all of the infectious agents that are out there. There are two layers of the skin. The outermost layer is called the epidermis, and the inner layer is called the dermis. And right along the border between the epidermis and the dermis are a series of pigment cells called melanocytes. And those are the cells that are the origin of both moles and melanoma.
So are cancer cells darker, Dr. Pavlik?
Melanoma can come in essentially two different forms. Most melanomas are, in fact, pigmented with excessive melanocytes that become abnormal, and so those are the melanomas that are dark. However, there are very rare cases of non-pigmented melanomas, which also occur and look more like pink pimples on the skin.
Now, moles are clusters of melanocytes, aren't they? Are they related to melanoma in any way? Don't many people just have moles and live long lives without ever having cancer?
That's entirely true. Most moles in general are benign and not cancerous. They're just a small clustering of dark spots on people's skin, which is a clustering of melanocytes. However, there can be moles which become what we call dysplastic or abnormal, where the cells can grow and become cancerous and grow at an uncontrolled rate, and those become melanomas.
Do they look or feel different than other moles?
In most cases, yes. Many of the moles that become melanoma become elevated, can become enlarged, can have multiple colors within them. We normally tell patients and educate them about the ABCDEs of melanoma, which is asymmetry, when a mole is no longer perfectly round in shape. The B is the border, meaning that the borders are no longer very crisp and clear, but they can look like fingers that project into the normal skin. Color, meaning that they can be multiple colors, either black, brown, red. And D is the diameter, meaning the size, if the size of the mole grows. And E was recently added, meaning that a mole is evolving, where it had been something that the patient had been born with, but over time has started to change. And those are really the things that we tell people to look for.
Dr. Tucker, does melanoma begin like other cancers?
Insofar as cancer tends to be a disease of cells gone awry, where individual cells accumulate a number of genetic damage points and lose the normal control over growth and growth regulation. Yes, melanoma is like other cancers, but melanoma is also quite different from other cancers in that it arises from this specific cell type, the pigment cell, the melanocyte.
Can you tell us a bit about your research into the genetic component of risk?
Sure. We study families at high risk of melanoma. We are still actively recruiting families with three or more individuals who have melanoma. What we try to do are find genes that increase the risk of melanoma.
Haven't I read somewhere that there's no melanoma gene, but rather there are genes that are tumor suppressors for melanoma that have mutations, and that is the genetic connection?
Well, almost. There are tumor suppressor genes that are in every cell of our body, and they often are important in cell growth regulation, and two of those genes have been associated with risk of melanoma. But the vast majority of people who develop melanoma don't have that alteration in all the cells of their body.
How does sun become the trigger for this, or is sun the trigger for melanoma?
Sun is the major environmental factor for melanoma. We know that your risk of melanoma increases with increasing amount of time outdoors, even if you tan extremely well. There's new evidence also that tanning booths, which give quite high doses of ultraviolet exposure, also are related to an increased risk of melanoma. We don't understand the complete biologic mechanism of how the sun increases risk of melanoma, but it appears to be quite complex.
My guests are Dr. Margaret Tucker, Director of the Human Genetics Program and Chief of the Genetic Epidemiology Branch at the National Cancer Institute, and Dr. Anna Pavlik, Associate Professor of Medicine and Director of New York University's Melanoma Program. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Dr. Pavlik, we talked about tumors, and I know that not all tumors are malignant. What determines whether a tumor becomes malignant or not? Do we know?
We are hopefully going to have that answer in the near future. However, we do know that a lot of it has to do with abnormal regulation of the cell's DNA and different regulators of the pathway in which they grow and divide. Many of these things, as Dr. Tucker had explained about tumor suppressor genes, suddenly become awry, and these cells will then grow out of control. Unfortunately, we can't predict who is going to develop melanoma and who is not. It really is more a function of being very close to watching people on a regular basis who we think are at high risk of developing melanoma.
That would be based on family history?
It would, in fact, be based on family history. Patients who have been diagnosed with a melanoma in the past are at an increased risk of developing a second melanoma that had nothing to do with the first melanoma. And commonly, patients with blonde hair, blue eyes, fair skin, and freckles are the patients that we classically worry about developing melanoma.
Where in the body does it most often develop? Oh, go ahead, Dr. Tucker.
Another very important risk factor for melanoma are the type of moles that Dr. Pavlik mentioned before, the dysplastic nevi. They are quite characteristic, and they identify individuals who are at substantially increased risk of developing melanoma. And in this country, about half of all people who develop melanoma have these dysplastic nevi. So that's another group that we would be very careful about screening and following closely.
Is that something that a dermatologist might notice?
Yes.
Or a family practice doc. So if we think we may have a dysplastic nevi, we would go to our regular doctor or to a dermatologist and say, is this okay?
Yes, that's exactly
And if the answer is, well, it's not, it may be dysplastic nevi, then we should be more concerned about, we should be on the lookout in the future.
Yes,
now,
that's correct.
Dr. Pavlik, where in the body does melanoma most often develop?
Many times melanoma develops in heavily sun-exposed areas, either the arms, the legs, the chest, or the back. There are very rare instances and very rare cases of melanoma that can occur in the eye as well as in the mucosal areas like the sinus or even the digestive tract, but those are very, very rare. The most common is really the sun-exposed areas.
And is it different in men and women and people of different races?
In men and women, it really is not significantly different as to where they develop their melanomas. However, it is very different in different races. Races that are more heavily pigmented, such as African Americans and more dark-skinned individuals, have a tendency not to develop skin melanomas on their upper body or their arms and their legs. However, they will develop what's called acral melanomas, which are melanomas that occur on the palms and soles of their feet or underneath their fingernails or toenails.
Now, we mentioned earlier that dysplastic nevi might very well be a clue. People have moles removed. If we have those moles removed, does that reduce risk?
It is likely that it does reduce risk somewhat, but we don't recommend that for the following reasons. First of all, the vast majority of dysplastic nevi will never change in a way that's worrisome for melanoma. And so it would be a lot of unnecessary surgery. Some people have literally hundreds of these lesions, and the chance of any one of them changing is quite small. What we recommend is people have dysplastic nevi is that they get to know their moles and that their healthcare practitioners photograph and get to know their moles, and they only biopsy one of the moles when it's changing in a way that's worrisome for melanoma.
A friend who has a melanoma says that she feels that it was because she went to the beach when she was a kid all the time, had severe blistering sunburns, never thought twice about it, always had a tan when she was a kid. Dr. Pavlik, is that likely a reason in her case?
We do, in fact, take that history from patients because as your cells are developing and as there is damage to these cells that are dividing, we do know that blistering, scalding sunburns as a child as well as in your teen years can alter your cell's DNA and over time consequently lead to melanoma. So yes, we do really ask for that history, and many times we do get histories of patients who are lifeguards or, again, fair-skinned children who, you know, many years ago we weren't as informed about melanoma as we are now and really never had sunscreen put on them.
So when we hear that melanoma has more than doubled in the past 30 years, we're talking about sometimes something that occurred 30 years ago and then suddenly becomes a problem. Are people using, more and more people are using sunscreens today. Do you think that that will decrease the incidence of melanoma in the future?
We certainly hope so. Basically, the effect of the sun is very important when you're young, as Dr. Pavlik said, because people are growing and you can accumulate a lot of damage to the cells during that time. But we also have there's a lot of recent data that indicates that adult sun exposure also contributes to risk of melanoma.
Now, we talked about how you might spot an indication, but aren't some of these cancers indetectable, only detected if you take a CAT scan or a PET scan? How do people know to do that in the first place?
Routine surveillance for melanoma is performed by the patient's primary care physician and or their dermatologist, especially if they're at people who are at high risk.
They take photographs of them and then they compare the moles?
That's correct. People who have a large predominance of moles or have this dysplastic nevus syndrome are recommended to undergo whole body photography, which allows a time point for the dermatologist to examine the patient compared to the present time exam to see if any of the moles have changed in size or shape or they develop any new moles in that area.
And then what happens when they discover they have a melanoma? They use surgery, don't they?
Yes, the best way to cure melanoma, or the only way we really know to cure melanoma, is through surgical intervention. Depending upon the depth of the melanoma will depend upon whether the patient is referred to a surgeon or the mole is removed by the dermatologist.
But why? But in other cancers, chemotherapy is effective. Radiation can be effective. Why only surgery in the case of melanoma?
Do you want that one or do we?
The both of you can answer. I'm sure you both have thoughts on that.
Well, melanoma is typically quite resistant to both chemotherapy and radiation therapy. And part of that may be the biology of the pigment cell itself. The melanin actually acts as a shield to protect the nucleus of the melanocyte, and it absorbs a lot of the damage of the free radicals that are made by both the radiation and the chemotherapy.
So the only known treatment is to cut it out. I've been hearing about other possibilities, interferon, vaccines, something called GMCSF. Dr. Pavlik, have any of those things been proven to work?
There are a lot of different treatments that are out there for melanoma. What's most important really for patients to understand is that the patients that we recommend these preventive type of treatments for are when the melanoma has actually gotten out of the skin and has moved into the lymph nodes, or it is an exceedingly large melanoma. And that's when we recommend them to undergo or even to consider what we call adjuvant therapy. The standard FDA-approved adjuvant therapy in the United States is a medicine called alpha interferon, which is in fact not a chemotherapy but a biologic drug because it's a compound that's normally secreted within your body. We've been able to synthesize that compound and give it to patients in high doses in an attempt to really stimulate their body's own immune system to be able to keep the melanoma away. Interferon is currently the best drug that we have for the adjuvant setting. However, it's not without a large number of side effects, and because of those side effects, many people don't or can't tolerate interferon.
It's highly toxic, but also I've read Dr. John Kirkwood, who's the man who really is behind it at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, says that it has a 7 to 20% positive benefit and no real overall survival benefit. So if it's highly toxic and we're talking about a best 20% benefit and no improvement in survival, why would anybody even want to go through something
like
that?
Well, that's a great question, and that's why we keep doing research. We are currently doing research here looking at different ways to create melanoma vaccines or other ways to target this cancer by triggering the patient's immune system without the subsequent toxicity of interferon. All vaccines for melanoma are currently in clinical trials. They are not FDA approved, so patients just can't go and get a vaccine. They have to be enrolled onto a clinical trial.
We have to take a little break. When we come back, we'll be taking listener calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's area code 212-433-WNYC. My guests are Dr. Anna Pavlik, Associate Professor of Medicine and Director of New York University's Melanoma Program, and Dr. Margaret Tucker, Director of the Human Genetics Program and Chief of the Genetic Epidemiology Branch at the National Cancer Institute. Call now. We're back with Drs. Margaret Tucker and Anna Pavlik talking about melanoma on today's Please Explain and taking your calls at 212-433-9692. I just want to clear up one more thing before we go to the calls, and I probably should go to Dr. Pavlik with this, but please jump in at any time, Dr. Tucker. As I understand what we've been saying, there is no known cure for melanoma. You cut it out, and then you hope that it doesn't come back, but the odds are that it will come back. So you cut that out, and then you'll get another melanoma. What happens? Do little cells go traveling across the body, or are there melanoma cells all over the body that just become a problem at different times?
That's a very good question. In fact, if you find melanomas quite early when they are very thin, they have not grown down deep enough into the skin to get to the lymphatic vessels and the blood vessels, and the chance of those spreading is quite small. So that, in fact, about 80% of melanomas are cured by 80% of melanomas overall, and a higher percent than that are actually cured by simple excision.
Most of those melanoma excisions later are in the lymph nodes?
When I say melanoma excision, that's just taking a piece of the skin around the melanoma.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens then is the pathologist looks at the melanoma, and if it has specific characteristics under the microscope, or it is a particular thickness, or it is down near where the blood vessels are, then it may be necessary to look at the lymph nodes, as Dr. Pavlik mentioned before. But if it's very thin and appears to be quite low risk, then there's really no reason to look at the surrounding lymph nodes. The question of another melanoma arising, it usually is not at all related to the first melanoma that occurs, but a person who has both the exposure and the susceptibility to make one melanoma may make a completely independent second melanoma. If that person is under surveillance and staying out of the sun and taking care of their skin, it is likely that any subsequent new primary melanomas would be found also at a very early stage and could be easily cured by surgery.
You want to add to that, Dr. Pavlik?
I totally agree. Most of the patients who come to see me are patients who already, who already know that they've got a deep melanoma, or they've got melanoma that's already gone to those lymph nodes, and that's why they come seeking research studies or experimental drugs that may prevent them from having a recurrence.
And those recurrences will continue in the skin and in the lymph nodes, or can melanoma then spread to other organs? Can you get melanoma on your lungs or on your liver?
Yes, unfortunately, once the melanoma gets into the lymph nodes, because you have lymph nodes located all over your body, they essentially act like a subway system to allow the melanoma cells to travel to different parts of the body. So it's not uncommon when patients have a recurrence that they will have melanoma come back in their lungs or their liver, essentially any body part, including the brain. And it's for those patients who have melanoma that goes to the lymph nodes, or again, deep melanomas, that we do recommend regular scanning so that we can follow the insides as well as their skin.
Let's take some calls. Micheline from the East Village. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I had a melanoma when I was 22 and it was removed. It was at the early stages. And since then, I've had basal cells removed, and I was wondering why they remove basal cells if it doesn't look like it's going to mutate into a melanoma.
That's a very good question. Basal cells arise from a different cell in the skin. They are not related at all to melanoma, which arises from the pigment cells. The reason that people remove basal cells is that although it is very rare for them to spread, they can grow locally, and as they grow, they sort of have fingers that spread out through the skin. And eventually, if they are not removed, the basal cell can become ulcerated and quite ugly and unpleasant. So basal cells are removed to both cure them and to keep them from growing slowly bigger.
A listener writes, is a mole that's a little painful when touched or pressed something I should have checked out?
Absolutely. Anytime you have a mole that is either painful, irritated, itchy, bleeding, or you've noticed is just growing, those are the moles that really need to be assessed by a dermatologist.
Dan from Amityville. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Leonard. Thank you for taking my call. 7 weeks ago, I had a kidney transplant. It was very successful, and I have been warned about the sun. I haven't been told I cannot go in it at all, but I should use number 30 and above and not have prolonged time in the sun. Could you, the doctors comment on, I have, of course, a compromised immune system now, and I want to know if I'm more susceptible to these problems.
There is an immune system connection, isn't there, Dr. Tucker?
Yes, there is. Your doctors have told you exactly the right thing. Individuals who have had a kidney transplant are at higher risk of developing another kind of skin cancer, squamous cell carcinoma, but also melanoma. The way to prevent this from happening is to use sun protective behavior, which is a whole complex of behaviors, including staying out of the sun in the middle of the day, using sunscreens of SPF 30 or above when you're going to be out in the sun.
What about sunglasses?
Sunglasses are also important. Using sun protective clothing or hats, and avoiding sunburn. In general, there's a sort of rule of thumb. You shouldn't be outside when your shadow is shorter than you are. That's when the sun is directly overhead.
Thank you for your call. We go now to Miriam from Westchester. Hi, Miriam. You're on the air.
Hi. Couple of questions. One, you said something about GMC.
GMCSF. That this is a question for Dr. Pavlik, I think.
What is it? Because I know someone that has been going through a melanoma treatment, and I don't know GMC. She's had interferon, and now she's on interleukin-2, and I wanted to know what they think about interleukin-2.
Dr. Pavlik?
Okay. I'll first address the GM-CSF. GM-CSF is a growth factor that was originally designed to help patients who had bone marrow transplants to stimulate their bone marrow to grow new immune cells, per se.
Okay.
It is currently not an indication for this drug to be used in melanoma. However, it is actively being researched because we know it does stimulate the immune system and may be helpful as a preventive mechanism, very much like interferon is, to try and prevent melanoma from coming back. But it's not something that is routinely ordered at this time because we have not proven that it's as useful as we hope it is.
Okay.
Has anything been proven to be useful?
Well.
Let's talk about leukines.
Interleukin-2?
Yes. Well, leukine is GM-CSF. Interleukin-2, also known as Proleukin, is the other FDA-approved biologic treatment for melanoma. It is indicated for patients with metastatic disease, meaning their disease has gotten out of its primary site and out of the lymph nodes and gone to other parts of the body.
Okay.
Not everyone is eligible to take interleukin-2 because, again, these biologics have a tendency to have a large number of side effects that can be detrimental and toxic to patients.
Okay.
And like most of our other melanoma treatments that we currently have available, the efficacy is really only in the range of about 15 to 20%. So it's a lot of toxicity to think about for not a whole lot of benefit, although there's not a whole lot of other options other than good clinical trials.
Now, what about we mentioned vaccines earlier. There was a Dr. Morton who had developed a vaccine called CancerVax, or at least Dr. Donald Morton of the John Wayne Center in Santa Monica, and that went into clinical trials pretty advanced, and then it turned out that there was a fear that it was actually doing more harm than good. Why would vaccines seem like a good idea to me?
Vaccines have always seemed like a good idea to us. Unfortunately, we don't know enough about manipulating the body's immune system to have been able to figure out how to make a vaccine that is, quote, the right vaccine.
Dr. Tucker, do you see any of these treatments as having some kind of promise in the future?
We certainly hope so. People are trying very hard now to do exactly what Dr. Pavlik just described, figure out how to modulate the body's own immune response in a way that helps the body recognize the tumor cells without having other consequences on normal cells.
Well, since
and that's been quite difficult so far.
Since there's a genetic component here, I don't want to get too political, but would stem cell research offer some promise?
That's a good question. It could, but that's a little bit different take. It would be an unusual use of stem cell research, I believe.
Not where they're going these days.
Not where they're going these days.
Sarah from Cranford, New Jersey. Hi, you're on. Please explain.
Hi, I had a question about a mole that developed when I was pregnant about 3 years ago, and it's very strange looking. It seems to grow, and it's sort of irritated. And I had both my OB check it out and my regular doctor, and they both said it looked fine, but it just doesn't. It just seems so strange. I wonder if I should check it out somewhere else.
Well, my recommendation to you, without even seeing it, is that, yes, if it looks irritated and it's something that's developed during your pregnancy and it looks suspicious, it should be taken off, because at worst it's going to be a dysplastic nevus and then it's gone and it's nothing you need to worry about.
Thank you for calling us. A listener writes, had a melanoma removed. The doctor says she's okay, but now she's considered hormonal therapy because of menopause. Is that a bad idea?
Probably not. People have been concerned about the hormonal effects on melanoma risk. And at this time, there is really no association with postmenopausal hormonal therapy and melanoma risk.
But aren't there some
things documented?
Aren't there some things that are prescribed, like steroids?
Steroids.
Antihistamines, perhaps?
Antihistamines are usually okay. Steroids, the concern about steroids is that they are an immune suppressant, and since melanoma is so exquisitely sensitive to immune modulation in your body, that's why most people are told to avoid steroids once they've had a melanoma.
Some people say that turmeric, which is a spice, has a positive effect with melanoma. Has there been any research into that?
Well, that's data that actually came out of a research lab at MD Anderson, where they looked at this compound in mice who were given melanoma as well as in some petri dish melanoma growth, and it looked to be suppressive in those tumors.
Is there less melanoma in India, where turmeric is a basic part of the diet?
Well, there's less melanoma in India because most of those patients are also much darker skinned than patients in North America or Australia. So it's really hard to say, is it just the pigmentation of the population or is it the turmeric in their diet? So it's actively being explored. I say this with trepidation, that it may be beneficial. However, what we see happening in the lab many times does not translate into what happens in human beings either.
I want to thank you both so much for participating in today's Please Explain. We've been talking with Dr. Anna Pavlik, an associate professor of medicine and director of New York University's melanoma program, a person who deals with people with stage 1 or 2 melanomas and up?
Well, actually, stage 1 melanomas are the patients who see their dermatologist.
And we have to leave it there. Dr. Margaret Tucker, Director of the Human Genetics Program and Chief of Genetic Epidemiology at the National Cancer Institute.